Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. On our way to our conversation about national politics and this election that we are all in the midst of, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We are joined today by Charles Ellison, political strategist, host of the Ellison Report here on WEAA and now national correspondent for WEAA. Charles, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Mark, as always, it's good, man. How you doing?
I'm well. And Dr. Richard Vatz. Rick Vatz is professor of rhetoric and communication at Towson University's Department of Instructional Leadership and Professional Development, author of the only authentic book of persuasion, The Salience Agenda, Meaning Spin Model, and is also a political commentator in The Sun who has a lot of deeply held opinions and thoughts as well. Good to have you back in the studio, Rick.
Good to be here. Not for The Sun. I'm not regular.
Op-ed.
Yeah. I sometimes write op-eds for them.
And you just did about Trump.
About 4 weeks ago, I did about Trump, and I have one coming up on Thursday.
About
the election.
Okay, well, we'll get into some of that and see what you're going to tell us.
Okay.
410-319-8888, your thoughts. Or tweet us at Mark Steiner, send us an email to talk@steinershow.org, 410-319-8888. I want to hear your ideas about where this election is. And also, do join us by phone, and I'll be getting these names, and we'll get you on the air. Where do you begin? Mr. Trump has now announced his economic plan. Interesting, his economic board of advisors, Charles, are all men and all people in the oil and in capital industry. No kind of breadth of thought there, at least from my perspective. What's your analysis? Then we'll go over to Rick Vatz.
You know, the interesting thing is the choice of Detroit as a venue. And it's not just Trump. You know, you've had quite a few GOP presidential hopefuls. You have folks like Rand Paul. You had Mitt Romney in 2012 do this. You even had Jeb Bush. They use it for two reasons. One, as some sort of minority outreach tool, given that Detroit is a majority black city, and also as a way to sort of rip Democrats' urban policy to say, you know, hey, this is a sample of how Democrats have ran major metropolitan areas into the ground. But the interesting thing, and the sort of rather hypocritical thing about not just Trump, but this announcement of an economic plan in Detroit, is that it looks very much like, or sounds very much like, a stimulus package, right? And so when we had this debate a couple of years ago when President Obama put forward this massive injection of funding, it wasn't even a full $1 trillion, but he had proposed, and they also in Congress eventually passed through this $800-900 billion, as they called it, stimulus package. There was lots of pushback from conservatives and Republicans who were saying, you know, this is a big government getting in the way. This is, you know, once again, Democrats wasting money. And it was supposed to be this big sort of battle of ideas that Republicans basically are saying, hey, we know how to manage money better. And so here their nominee is proposing something that's very similar to it, to the tune of about $500 billion, and there's no pushback at all. There's nothing from red meat or rank-and-file conservatives or anybody in the Republican establishment who's pushing back on that. And so I find that very odd. I find that very interesting. That's kind of the big takeaway from this speech.
Your thoughts, Rick Vatz?
Well, I'm actually not overly familiar with his economic proposal, except that it's consistent with Paul Ryan's and other Republicans whom I respect, but who are not respected by the rank and file of Trump supporters. I know that Hillary has claimed that it represents the old trickle-down economics, which she disparages by calling it the old trickle-down economics, but that There are a number of economic experts who believe that we have had a really tepid economy for 8 years, and the reason is because all we do is make make the public more dependent on government, and that this will be good for small businesses, and that that has a salutary effect on the economy.
So spoken by a conservative who is looking for a place in the sun in this election, hasn't found it yet.
Well, I'll right? tell you, you're absolutely right. I've never been so dispirited by an election in my lifetime, because there's never been an election in my lifetime that I haven't had somebody to really root for. I mean, I could go through all the elections.
I did that the other day. I wrote this whole list of every election from 1960 to now, where I was and why, thinking about what's going on right now.
Yeah, and I'm very right. happy with everybody I supported from 1960 on. I could tell you who they were.
We were both kids, but yeah, still. Yeah. Right.
We were kids, right. I consider Hillary Clinton one of the most dishonest politicians, and that's hard to be, stand out by your dishonesty among politicians. One of the most dishonest politicians that I've ever seen, and I think Donald Trump is one of the most reckless politicians I've ever seen. And I said in the Baltimore Sun 4 weeks ago in an op-ed piece that I was not going to vote for either of them. And I've received a flack on that from both sides. But I cannot see a Trump presidency in which he overreacts to a foreign policy crisis and uses nuclear weapons. And, you know, he has been said to wonder, although it may be apocryphal, he has been said to wonder, why don't we use our nuclear weapons more prominently as a threat or in actual usage? And I think he's like a 70-year-old kid who says, look, we've got these nuclear weapons. Why don't we use them? He's just utterly irresponsible. And, I mean, we could go through all of his contradictions and all of his tasteless remarks and people who are friends one day, enemies the next, friends the next. I just consider him utterly, utterly unstable and irresponsible.
Charles, jump in before we open the phones here. I'm curious for our listeners who you're voting for and why, how you feel about this election. 410-319-8888. We really want to hear what you have to say. But jump in, Charles.
You know, it's funny because, you know, a lot of conservatives are opposed to Trump for either privately or publicly because they feel as if his behavior is unbecoming. It's all based on cosmetics. It's not based on what a terrible thing this would be for the Republic. And so it's kind of like, you know, when they say Hillary Clinton is dishonest, well, you know, I'm not here defending Hillary Clinton by any sort of measure, but, you know, I've got, you know, what politician is honest? You know, what public official isn't honest? And it's kind of like, well, how do you define honesty in that sense? And so, but with Trump, it's, you know, a lot of conservatives are kind of like, well, it's because he's reckless or because he's, you know, he's very outrageous. He says volatile things. It's like, well, what about, you know, talking about what a Trump presidency would look like in terms of his management, his abilities to manage the country, his executive skills, and how disastrous that would be. Let's have a conversation about that. And so, you know, that's why it's really not a big deal when you see high-profile Republicans like Susan Collins, for example, or Congressman Kaufman out in Colorado
right.
come out against Trump. Those are some of the more center-right, moderate Republicans anyway. Get back to me when you have, you know, these red meat, you know, these grassroots or Tea Party grass-tops Republicans who start coming out against Trump. But they're very mum on that topic. They won't do it. They just keep saying, oh, we shouldn't have a Hillary Clinton presidency. Well, okay, well, if you don't want a Hillary Clinton presidency, then what is the alternative? Like, really, you really want Trump to be the alternative? You really think that way? Is this really just all about your movement winning and about the party winning and not so much about the state of the republic?
I mean, what I consider to be the traditional conservatives are many of them are opposing Trump because of his utter unpredictability. And when you have a foreign policy which you know has been completely contradicted, I mean, you know, the business where he claims he was against the Iraq War, when, I mean, that's just a, what we call, again, a space-time lie. I mean, he was for the Iraq War.
Right.
And so, you know, when you have George Will oppose him and lately some great, great pieces by Bret Stephens in the Wall Street Journal. And, I mean, and you've got John Kasich obviously opposing him. And I like Lindsey Graham. I mean, you know, I know that he bears an awful lot of criticism from the right. But I think Lindsey Graham is a great senator. I just think that I think Donald Trump would be disastrous, and I think Hillary Clinton is, again, she's completely deceptive and much more deceptive. She also tells space-time lies. I mean, claiming that Comey had validated her answers when he didn't. I mean, you find direct contradiction. You could go to the interview on Fox by Chris Wallace. You could go to the article by Gordon Krowitz in the Wall Street Journal. I mean, these aren't just simple exaggerations. She these are also space-time lies. I mean, this
can
isn't
clarify
normal.
That?
Go ahead.
Let me clarify this real quick. First of all, and this is rather widely known inside the Beltway. I will admit, however, that Hillary Clinton has done a really poor job of clarifying it herself. Those emails that were classified as confidential, they weren't made confidential until the investigation started. You know, and that's kind of the big elephant in the room that the FBI doesn't want to talk about, Congress doesn't want to talk about, because it's really embarrassing that the classification system is that slow, that it's not that fast paced where it can't catch up to present day. I mean, that's what she was trying. She's been trying to make that point, but she's been very clumsy in doing it and basically saying, hey, you know, we didn't really realize the emails that we're tagging as classified were classified until we started the investigation, or until, you know, other emails, until we were halfway through the investigation. She didn't know. And it was. And I'm not defending her actions. I'm not defending the actions of her staff. But that just goes to show you how, in many respects, this is a very manufactured scandal. I mean, we're actually going to determine the trajectory, the fate of this great republic based on someone's preference for an email server. Think
That's
about
just not
how
true.
Ridiculous and baseless that sounds.
That's
and one last point is, and I mean, I really have to be, you know, really angry about that. You know, people are making decisions about the fate of the republic based on how much Hillary Clinton smiles, and also about whether or not she used an appropriate email server. Like, really?
Let me,
I won't take up too much time.
You're doing pretty well.
You're resistant to Trump. You don't want Hillary Clinton as president. So what do you want? Who do you want running the White House? You're not answering that question.
Well, it's hard.
Well, let me let Rick answer. Rick Fats, go ahead.
First of all, that is a complete misrepresentation of her lying about the email situation. She said that she had turned over all her work-related email, and Comey testified, no, we found work-related emails, thousands that were not returned. She misrepresented Comey's statements over and over again. She said at first that she just wanted a private email because it was easier, and she had several private email accounts. And the lies about what Comey said and what she did are frequent. I mean, there she has many of them. And the fact is that we do not have a responsible candidate for president among the principals. And I don't like any of the candidates, including some of the Republicans who are running.
So let me go on. Folks, do join us here, 410-319-8888. I want to know who you're voting for and why. What your thoughts are on Clinton. What your thoughts are on Trump. What your thoughts are on Johnson and Stein, who are running as Libertarian and Green, respectively, and where you would put your vote. We just had talked to Mark Lamont Hill last week, who came out over the weekend, Dr. Mark Lamont Hill, saying he could not work for Hillary. He was going to work and vote for Jill Stein and the Green Party. What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888 about where your vote will be. We want to know that. And why? The polls now have Hillary Clinton up. All the polls do, just about. Have Hillary Clinton in the lead in this race, but this is August and not November. But in the latest poll by journalism poll by NBC News, they have her up by six when it's a four-person race with Jill Stein and Governor Johnson. But your thoughts at 410-319-8888. I want to know what you would do. And I a very quick question, Rick, and then come right back to Charles and get into the callers who are calling in right now. If you find Trump to be, as you wrote, unstable, kind of as many Republicans now, 50 people who have run our National Security Agency, not many people whose policies—
Impressive people.
Impressive people, and many of whose policies I don't agree with. Nevertheless, they have all come out to say Trump could be dangerous for our national security.
Right.
And you see him losing support even among military voters, which is that he had a majority of in the beginning.
Right.
I don't know whether that is exactly now. But so if that's where you are with this, and I understand what you're saying about Hillary, how could you or anybody else vote for a third party if they think that would allow Donald Trump to have keys to the button in the world?
Well, I'm also not voting for a third party because they're either crazy green or isolationist, and it is just a personal thing that when I'm in Maryland that I know Hillary's going to win the state. And I cannot vote for Trump because I could imagine my son saying to me when we're on the verge of a nuclear catastrophe, "You voted for him. How could you have voted for him?" And I could see with Hillary completely following the socialist policies of Bernie Sanders. Well, he calls himself socialist. Do you disagree?
Well, no, but I mean, I would hardly call Hillary Clinton's policies socialist. But anyway,
well,
I think that's a real
she's
stretch.
Moving there. She's moving there. Well, but ask her.
She's a capitalist through and through. She's not a socialist.
Well, she's
happens to be on the liberal side of capitalism, versus the conservative side of capitalism.
I think that the more and more government spending, the more and more government control you have of everything, the more you head towards socialism. I'm not saying she's a socialist.
Okay, good.
It's just impossible for me to vote for somebody could say to me later, "Why did you vote for them?" And I could say, "I have no idea except that they seem to be marginally less odious than the other."
Let me go, before I jump back to you, Charles, let me go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Who are you voting for and why? What are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Email us to talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. And Kenny, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
Thanks for calling.
Sure. I have two quick points. One is that I feel like there's this narrative of somehow one of the two major parties being owed a vote as opposed to earning the vote of the general population. And secondly, I'll be voting for the Green Party in the general election because I'm very disenchanted with both parties. And I feel like with our electoral college system in a state like Maryland, people can safely, in terms of a Trump potential presidency, vote their conscience in this election without, you know, risking a Trump presidency. And I feel like that's kind of lost in a lot of these. Like, well, if you're voting for if you're not voting for Hillary Clinton, you're voting for Trump. And I think that's frankly not realistic if you consider our political system.
Kenny, appreciate that thought and call. Let me go to the call and we'll come back to both of you to respond. 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark Steiner.
Hey, Leo Burrows. How are you?
And everybody else. I will tell you that the prospects of having the Clintons back in the White House, it's just not an enthusiastic feeling. I just don't get a sense of excitement of bringing them back and they trading places, as it were. Obviously, the sexual indiscretions of Bill Clinton have been taken off the table. So I'm sure that Monica Lewinsky is not coming back. Okay? I noticed that there's been no talk of that, and perhaps there should not be. But I'm wondering, what is Hillary bringing to the table with regard to an urban Marshall Plan or the American Jobs Act, which was highly touted by this president, which never came to fruition? I'm not sure she is interested in doing what needs to be done to change the imbalance with regard to poverty and the deprivations of the black man and the black people in this country. And again, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump. That's
I would think you would not, Leo, right?
But there's no way I could vote for Nutto, you know, Donald Trump. But how are we going to reduce our nuclear arsenal in this country? I mean, what are we going to do to reduce nuclear weapons? And I'm wondering, at this point in time, how serious should we be about maintaining the status quo? Apparently, when I get to the box, I might be forced to vote for the lesser of two evils, and that might be Clinton. But I'm leaning toward the Green Party, both nationally and locally, as in the case of Joshua Harris, who's running for mayor of Baltimore City. So I'm leaning in that direction. So that's all I want to say. I'm just very... Why couldn't the Clintons be the elder statesmen and those who were acted as a coach or leader in the Democratic Party in framing the Democratic Party futuristically for...
All right. I'm sorry, Leo. Don't hang up.
Hold that office.
Leo, thanks so much for the call. Right. I appreciate it. So, Charles, let me let you jump in.
Yeah, you know, very good point about nuclear proliferation. So we've been talking a lot about management of the nuclear arsenal during this election. When we do talk about issues, when we do happen to just, you know, suddenly shift the focus over to issues, because it's all been all about personalities this year. But talking about management of the arsenal, not talking about reducing it or eliminating it altogether. It is a conversation, to his credit, that President Obama had started at the beginning of his first term. It's something that we need to continue. Another point as far as protest votes, a lot of people felt that way back in 2000 when they voted for Ralph Nader, and look how 2000 ended up. And so a lot of folks, you do see a lot of older voters, you see this kind of represented in some surveys, you see a lot of folks who are sort of in my generation, Gen X, or who were voting at that time in 2000, hoping that, you know, basically who voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, realized that, you know, strategically it was a bit of a blunder. And so look what happened in terms of George Bush getting into the White House. So, you know, you do have, there are obviously older voters who are, you know, looking at other alternatives than Garrett Johnson and Jill Stein. But for the most part, you have a lot of voters who voted back in 2000 who aren't going to do that. You do, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of younger voters, or Bernie or Bus voters are gravitating towards either Stein, especially Stein, or Johnson, because they weren't living at that time or they weren't voting at that time. They were simply kids. But, you know, folks have to think, you know, rather pragmatically and strategically about, you know, do they want to do a protest vote? Do they want to do something that makes a point? Or do they want a vote that's on the side of caution and pragmatism and just maintaining stability, really? I mean, that's kind of what it's going to boil down to on November 8th. You're going to see a lot of voters, you know, when they get to the polls on November 8th, they're going to think, oh, wow, you know, what do I need to do to kind of keep things stable? One last point as far as the urban agenda. Clinton is going to focus. She's not focusing enough on an urban agenda, but she's not obligated to. And she's not obligated to unless the black media and black political class puts pressure on her to do so. And they're doing a very poor job of that.
Let me just sneak in a couple points real quick.
The National Association of Black Journalists meet with her, and they ask no questions about an urban.
I know that what happened at NABJ was a disaster in terms of Hillary's speech and the black and Latino journalists not having a chance to really question her. And the questions they did ask had nothing to do with black and Latino people at all, which was just crazy.
Exactly.
I thought I was going to ask Charles Robinson about that. But very quickly, Rick, I'm going to get three quick calls in here so we can go to our next segment.
Let me just make a couple quick points.
Yeah.
Number one, as I say, I the libertarians are awful on foreign policy, and they're also not consistent between each other on foreign policy. And secondly, with respect to foreign policy, Trump, who wants to eviscerate NATO because they haven't, a couple of small countries haven't paid their dues, and doesn't mind nuclear proliferation because he thinks it creates stability, which is crazy. And let me just say, I have to say that once every show, I've been on shows, including Mark's, for 20, 30 years. And every time I hear about all the social problems, and I've heard the same thing for 20, 30 years, and I'm telling you, until you change the population by strengthening the family, by disincentivizing fatherless families.
I do not want to get stuck.
I'm not going to get stuck. I just want to make that point.
Okay, fine. I do not want to go.
You do not, but that is why.
We don't have much time left. I don't want to. Okay.
I'm just saying that's why the problem. That's why the situation always remains.
And you know, we viscerally disagree on this and intellectually disagree on this point.
We do.
And so let's get.
But I'm right.
I love you, Vance. 410-319-8888. Let's get some quick calls in here, very quick. Andrew, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I'm calling. You know, the Nader Bush Gore election was one example, but the most telling example that I can see is the 1932 election in Germany, in which the socialists and the communists split the vote and elected Adolf Hitler.
No, that's not true.
Stop it, Rick.
Well, I'm sorry, it is.
No, it is true, though. It is true.
No, Hitler did not win that election.
He got 32% of the vote, and the reason he won was because the progressives and left were so busy killing each other that they couldn't.
Exactly.
He did not have a plurality of votes in that election. That's not the point.
Okay. Right. I think that you, if you look at that election, it was because the social democrats, socialists, and communists were so busy killing each other and fighting each other that he was allowed to take over the country.
That's true.
He was elected. He became chancellor of Germany according to the election laws in Germany at the time.
He did not win a plurality of votes.
So he still won the election, though.
He took the election.
Okay. But
okay.
I appreciate the call, Andrea. Hank, a quick thought from you before we have to run.
I wanted, took it, however, he got it. But here's the thing, right? And I say this, if we start a grassroots movement at the very bottom, right, make our city officials allow us to put a referendum in for the third party, then therefore, if you can grow a third party where you're not subjugated to go Republican or Democrat or vote for the lesser evil, because the independents, they earned your right, they earned your vote. They didn't, you don't get their vote. We have to actually give them our vote, right? Which means they earned it. Evidently, it's something that we see in Bernie Sanders or independent that we don't see in the Republicans or the Democrats. But until you do it at the low level, at the bottom, your city council, your what you call it, as an independent, you're never going to have an independent governor to make it to an independent president. You're never going to do it, and therefore we're stuck with a two-party system, right? I don't mind Hillary Clinton, right? I'm getting screwed out of a way. But I'd rather get screwed by Hillary with some grease than screwed by Donald with not.
I hear you, Hank. Thank you, Hank.
I got 17-year-old kids that will go to war when this man says so, right? I don't have time to fight a war or have my children fight a war for something that's not worthy.
I appreciate the call, as always, Hank. And let's get one final very quick thought from Wayne. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'd like to say that if Hillary is elected, I'd really like to see a national jobs program where we have such...
Wayne, there's something on your phone. We cannot hear you. All right, so... I think we just lost him. Okay, so let's – very quick final thoughts here. Rick Vatz, Charles Ellison, quick final thoughts as we go to break.
Yeah, I think this is the election from hell. I think that the outcome is going to be disastrous, whatever it is. And I think you have a choice between a completely dishonest individual and a completely reckless person.
Charles?
Yeah, I agree with Rick there. I think one thing that's real tragic about this cycle, too, is that we haven't been talking about any issues at all. And also, we're going to have to think post-election. The poll just came out from Public Policy polling, which showed that 54% of Trump supporters believe that this election will be rigged if Hillary Clinton wins. That's a big problem beyond the election.
No, I think what you just said beyond this election is a real fear. I think this country is. Let me get a quick thought on this as we go out of here. I think that our country is so split around race, around who we are as a society. It can be seen from the numbers for Trump that will not budge in the mid to high 40s, and also in the community in America, that black and brown and forces and progressive forces in America is so deeply split that I do worry about what's going to happen in terms of violence, other things in our country post this election, no matter who wins. Charles,
I think
Ellis.
You're correct.
Yeah. What'd you say, Rick?
I think you're correct.
Charles?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that assessment, Mark. I think there's a lot of work that folks are going to have to do to keep that from happening, but not very hopeful beyond November 8th as far as the political and social climate right now.
Well, I want to thank you both. Charles Ellison is political strategist, host of the Ellison Report here on WEAA every Sunday night at 9, a national correspondent for WEAA covering the conventions and more. Always good to have you with us, Charles. Look forward to it again very soon. And Dr. Rick Vax, always good to have you. Richard Vax, of course, professor of rhetoric and communication at Towson University's Department of Institutional Leadership and Professional Development, author of the book, The Only Authentic Book of Persuasion, The Salience, Agenda, Meaning, Spin, Model.
Read my Thursday piece in the Sun.
And there's a piece coming out on Thursday and has been a guest on the show for the last 23 years. Always good to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Mark. One of my favorite people in the world.
Thank you, man. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be joined by Arun Gupta to talk about his latest article in The Nation about people making money on the backs of people in prison. Stay with us.